This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and waiting. The A-team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Raw. From Monday night, download it Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Raw. From Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Yes, everybody, it is WrestleMania week at Post Wrestling, and here to kick things off with me, Davey Portman from Poison Rana, who is with me, and we are going to be chatting about the whole go-home edition of Raw, heading into this weekend's two-night event in Las Vegas, with many, many events all scheduled. Davey, I did not ask you this earlier, but had you been down in Las Vegas, do you think you would have made your way to the Tony Hinchcliffe roast of WrestleMania?
I did until his appearance on Raw last week. And then it made me think, oh, am I just going to watch Jerry Lawler host a roast? One of our friends, Samet and Barak, who are listeners of Post Wrestling, I know they're going, and I want them to fill us in with what is being said. It is probably the only other WWE event outside of Mania and Stand and Deliver that I am very curious about. I think that's the word, curious. I do have a curiosity about how far they push the envelope with something like that.
I think for the audience that is paying for it, I don't think they want to watch a comedy show with like kid gloves on. Like, I think like the expectation and like given the lineup that they have there is, I feel like that is kind of the show they're going to present to people.
I hope so. I hope so. They should.
All right. Well, we are going to be doing daily shows here at Post Wrestling. For those that are members at PostWrestlingCafe.com, we are going to have tons of coverage this week. And kicking things off today, a special look back at every single WrestleMania currently up on the Post Wrestling Cafe, where I exhausted my vocal cords on day one of WrestleMania week. But we have lots coming up this week. Keith Elliott Greenberg is going to be joining me on Tuesday. He's the author of this new book on WrestleMania 3 that he did a lot of interesting research on. So we're going to be chatting about that. And then beginning Thursday at noon Eastern, we will be doing daily shows. I'll be joined by John Cena Thursday and Friday. And then we've got Kate from Montreal and Cena Saturday at noon. And then Sunday at noon, if they are alive by that point, which is a bit of an if. I know Davey Portman, he will be here in this seat. Braden, we will hope there's a pulse, but they will be there Sunday at noon to go through NXT Stand and Deliver and night one of their big on location watch party of WrestleMania. Night one downtown at Gabby's in Toronto, 309 King Street West, where you can go and hang out with Davey and Braden both nights of WrestleMania, the place to be in Toronto this weekend.
Yes, it's going to be absolutely packed. We are almost sold out. If you are looking for tickets, please go to poisonrana.ca to try and get one. And if it does show up, say sold out, give us an email. We'll try and hook you up because we want all the Post listeners there.
Yes. Tell them John Pollock sent you exactly. And you'll get a hug from Braden Harrington. Okay. That's my guarantee. So check
out the code, the ultimate thrill ride. Isn't that the thing?
Yes. We don't have a we don't really have a tagline for this year's WrestleMania. Maybe we got a last minute slogan at the end of tonight. The business will die if not for Seth Rollins. But yes, go check out tickets can be found poisonrana.ca and jump on board postwrestlingcafe.com for a ton of WrestleMania week coverage that'll be up on the cafe coming up this week. But tonight we are going to Sacramento, California at the Golden One Center. WrestleTix reporting 14,200 tickets out. And this, a bit of an anomaly. The WrestleTix number was actually higher than the number that Michael Cole gave out on the broadcast, which was just slightly lower. But suffice to say, a lot of people at this show, which, I mean, Michael Cole throughout this night is just this electric crowd. And maybe it's still the after effects of those European crowds. I did not hear an electric crowd tonight, especially like the bell to bell of the matches where it's like this audience was just kind of we're waiting for our big promo segments and whatnot. But I mean, hey, they paid top dollar for this final Raw before WrestleMania.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I didn't think it was a particularly electric crowd, but I didn't also think it was a particularly electric show, considering the time of year we're at.
Well, this is the go-home show. Gunther kicks off the show. Michael Cole's in the ring to interview him, and a lot of boos for Gunther, and Gunther just gets right to the point. He says that Jey Uso is full of crap when he says he isn't afraid of him. Screw your question, screw Jey Uso, and screw everything. Gunther is the greatest gift this company has ever received. I've been a champion for 80% of my career here and the greatest world champion of all time. I think he's had enough of these Cody Rhodes promos about this championship. And what will we do if this championship is taken away by John Cena? He says, Jey can't lace his boots. I will beat you for a fourth time. And I was in complete control when I took a bath in Jimmy's blood. And I loved it. So go pray to the Lord. Thank him for not drowning both of you in Jimmy's blood. I will call my mother next week after beating Jey, and I will still be champion. So the man had a lot of points to hit. Screw everything, bathing in blood, and he's going to, like Ernest Miller, somebody call my mama by the end of this.
Gunther's been great this whole feud. I think his promo was something I was never expecting to be at the level it is when he came to WWE, and he is incredibly comfortable in his body, like exactly who he is, what this character is. This feud has gone on so long. He brought it up fourth consecutive time. I think their last match was, what, November, the Saturday night's main event, and this story has pretty much gone on since then. And it's suffered because of that. There's been so much build, and I'd say that's been the same problem with the Charlotte Tiffany build, although that's had its own problems. But I think they've really picked it up the last couple of weeks. I think that the beatdown of Jimmy was very much needed. I liked Jey's Uso, like the understated promo last week, and Gunther showing a bit of fear. But even in this segment, it felt like a bit of, you know, bravado, like fake bravado, trying to convince himself that he is still the guy and can dominate him. They've picked it up in the last few weeks, and I am now looking forward to this match. I think we need blood for it, though. If you're having it with Jimmy, Jey needs to be bleeding and look like he is on the edge of death before coming back and eventually getting this win. And I think because of that, and with this crowd and everything, I think it will be a pretty cool moment at Mania. So this isn't really a feud or a match that I'm worried about, which is interesting considering the reaction when Jey Uso originally won the Rumble.
Yeah. And just to put it into like context, Jey Uso won that Royal Rumble 10 weeks ago. And I mean, it's not like we had this long drawn out, process. Like, we knew this match pretty early on and everything, and I agree with you, like, this certainly kind of like, how many new ways can we involve these two in segments? But it's, they saved the money segments for these last few weeks with Jimmy last week, and then into tonight as well for kind of your final talk. So I think this program's in good shape, and you know that reaction is going to be terrific for Jey, and I think that this, like, I would be very surprised if Jey Uso has a repeat performance like he did last year at WrestleMania.
Exactly.
Throughout the night, we had video profiles on Bianca Belair, Io Sky, and Rhea Ripley, starting off with Bianca, who has been in her head ever since all the Jade and Naomi problems. But this is a different version of Bianca that has been brought out, and I am standing up for myself. I'm speaking the truth, and I am the best, and I've never been beaten at WrestleMania. So will the streak continue on this coming weekend for Bianca Belair? She's got a ways to go, but she is 4-0 so far.
It's been I haven't enjoyed the build for it. I am looking forward to the match because I'm a big fan of all three. It's one of those weird feuds where I'm watching it and going, everything you're doing, Rhea is the heel in this story, but she's so popular that she's not. And Bianca is completely justified in being, yo, you don't belong in this match. I won the chamber. I should be here. Yet she is kind of the most leaning heel. I think it's going to be an interesting reaction, and I'd be curious to see who the crowd side with on this is Saturday, right? This match, Sunday.
This one's Sunday. Yes.
Sunday. I'm looking forward to it. I can't say it's been the greatest build of all time, but I am a big fan of all three involved.
Liv Morgan took on Bayley. We had Raquel and Lyra in the respective corners, and early on, it's Bayley in control and goes for a dive, and she's met with a strike by Liv, who attempts the Three Amigos on the floor. The last one is blocked. She runs Liv into the steps, but then Bayley misses running her knee into the steps and would continue to sell the knee. Liv gets caught coming off the turnbuckle. Bayley misses with the knee strike, lands on the second, but is selling the knee after connecting with it. Tries for her sunset flip powerbomb and hits it into the buckle. Liv manages a code breaker on the edge and then a missile drop kick to the floor. Then she is caught with a Bayley to belly. This after Liv springboards and is caught in midair with a stunner. So Raquel saves Liv, putting her foot on the bottom rope. So Lyra goes after Raquel. And this is when the crowd really amped up here. It was when the women on the floor got involved. And there's a neck breaker delivered to Raquel by Bayley. And Lyra prevents Oblivion by holding on to Bayley, who then just turns around and catches Liv with a jackknife cover in 12 minutes and 54 seconds going into WrestleMania, where you're heating up these challengers. So what do you think overall, just in terms of Bayley's involvement here, and also Lyra Valkyria, who I think it's been a struggle with this IC title of kind of just finding kind of an identity for this title and for this character too, that's kind of just been added to this tag title program for Mania on a week's notice.
Well, to start with, you said Raquel put Liv Morgan's foot on the ropes. I mean, she tried. Her foot was nowhere near the rope in that in that breakup there. I haven't been a fan of this. I think this is what the case of. I think Liv Morgan 100% deserves a WrestleMania match. I think the work she's done in the last year, the feud with Rhea, she's been a focal character of a lot of stories in the past year. And I think she's really stepped up both in ring and in promo. You then have Bayley, who is just such an established character that you feel we've got to find a place for her on this card. And Lyra, who they're trying to establish as this this IC champion. I don't like champions being involved in tag feuds. It's something I criticize AEW about all the time. They seem to give someone a belt and then enter them in the tournament for another belt or put them in a tag team or whatever. And I'd rather they'd focus on that. It as someone who follows NXT, it feels weird because it felt like they were building to a big Roxanne Bayley singles feud. And I thought it was going to be one of the first cases of actually just moving a story from NXT onto the main roster. We already had Roxanne at the Rumble. We already had her at Chamber. I think she's made herself familiar enough with this audience, and there would have been enough time to either have the singles match with Bayley, or if you want Lyra involved, why, it's multi-person match season anyway. Why not do a triple threat with the three of them for the IC title and have Liv and Raquel defend against someone else? It feels super thrown together. I hate the idea of a gauntlet match to set up your challenges, very cold challenges, just a week and a bit outside of Mania. The match could be fine, but this is the one I have the least interest in. And I do like some of the people involved, but just no care given to this whatsoever to build up for Mania.
Yeah, it just feels like, you know, it's getting them a place on the card, and it's pretty much your bare bones build here and relying on, like, hopefully they can go out there and have like a fine 9-10 minute match, which is probably what you would expect from the allotment that they'll receive. They promoted Pat McAfee will have Roman Reigns and Paul Levesque on his show this Friday. And then Heyman is waiting in the parking lot. And my God, did he wait a long time. You would think by this point he realizes Roman Reigns, he shows up for his segment. That's kind of how these angles work with Roman Reigns. But there he was in the parking lot all night long. Next is Rhea Ripley, and says she can see right through Bianca Belair, who thrives on playing with Rhea's emotions. And you're trying to make me the bad guy. Well, I will stop at nothing to get my title back. And I get it back this weekend at WrestleMania. And yes, you know what? It's a great lesson that Shawn Michaels handed down to Rhea Ripley that, hey, you don't need to go through any of these matches. As long as you get your signature on that contract, you're as good as a title challenger needs to be.
Yes, and you can hear Braden and myself talk about the match you're referencing there. Shawn Michaels and Triple H in a triple threat match at WrestleMania 20 in our latest episode of Best Match Ever, where we talk about the greatest matches of Triple H.
Yes, yes, with the Invisible Man.
Yes.
Yes. Especially if you go to any of those fan accesses and you see the WrestleMania 20 poster, which is amazingly airbrushed to omit one figure as well. Rey Mysterio and Julius Creed was next. They mentioned this is Julius's first singles match on Raw. And I thought him and Rey had a really entertaining match here. We had Rey early on just hits his tilt-a-whirl head scissors, and Julius just responds with a big clothesline. Julius stops the 619, and Brutus gets on the apron and distracts as Gable knocks Rey off the buckle. This prompts Dragon Lee and the other LWO members to get involved. So Chad Patton ejects everyone, and Chad Gable yells, "This is bullcrap. This is America." It's like, yeah, it would really be out of character to just send all of these individuals to some unknown location without due process, as happened here with all these participants. So Ray then does his slide to the floor, and Julius goes to catch him to lift for a suplex, but Ray goes like right down from the momentum. So Julius, who's like, "I'm getting this guy up," literally deadlifts this guy from like a seated position up to his feet. Even if this did not go as planned, it was so much more impressive the way he lifted him. And then he just walks up the stairs onto the edge of the apron and then misses Ray running into the post. I mean, just the amount of strength that this just took, and he did it pretty seamlessly. Ray hits his Rana off the top. And then from there, Ray off the shoulders into a tornado DDT when El Grande Americano returns and goes for the mask of Ray. Ray goes for the mask, and then Julius rolls him up for a two count. Julius gets knocked into Grande, and then 619 and the slingshot splash by Ray in 10 minutes and 19 seconds. Like, Ray can structure his matches, and it's all built around the 619. He knows all his spots that will work with the crowd. But I mean, this was above just your usual Ray TV match. Like, I just thought these two were great together. And like, with Julius, I see a lot of like a big ceiling for him. There's part of me that kind of wishes he just got more time in NXT to really further develop, because this guy to me could be every bit the athlete of a Bron Breakker at some point when they're ready to really go with this guy.
Absolutely. I enjoy the Creeds as a tag team, but I've been saying about this guy since he was in NXT, I see like top of the company one day. Like, if he can get his promo together and stuff, I just think he's so exciting to watch, so impressive with some of those. We've seen him do the deadlift thing before. There was that, wasn't it a match against the Grizzled Young Vets where he essentially deadlifts both of them in that cage match, I think. And he has freakish strength and will always get a reaction. Brutus is fun too, but I definitely see a higher ceiling for Julius, and I really hope he gets more chances in singles matches to show it, because I think he could be a real prospect at the very top of the card one day if everything goes well. I enjoyed this match. This is probably my favorite match on the show, I think. And I'm just loving this El Grande Americano story they've got going on with Ray. I think it's great. We're getting Chad Gable versus Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania, which is awesome. And I said it on my Sunday Poison Rana show. I think sometimes the cream does kind of rise to the top, because Chad has been given a lot of shit in his time in WWE, but made it work. And this is something like, yeah, you could look at it as a stupid gimmick, but you've got a WrestleMania singles match against Rey Mysterio and a pretty fun, memorable gimmick right now. So I'm excited for this. I kind of think, Brayden and I were saying on Sunday, I kind of think that El Grande Americano should win this, because I think there is a little bit more juice you can squeeze out of this. And I think building to a mask versus mask match at some point would be pretty entertaining. So I'm hoping maybe Mania is when we get the bit of the twin magic with someone else under the mask and a bit of a screwy finish, having El Grande Americano win this one. But I've been enjoying this story.
Maybe he'll have some backup in the form of a Matanza, showing up.
Maybe
goes to his lucha roots. He finds Dario Cueto's secret weapon. So El Grande Americano attacks Rey with a headbutt because he's still got the loaded mask. Dragon Lee runs in. This is what I enjoyed the most, Davey. He starts firing off punches at Chad Gable or El Grande Americano's head. No effect on the hand here, but then he gets headbutted by the loaded mask and he's dead in a coma. And then it's a big swan dive off the top with a diving headbutt, and El Grande Americano stands tall here. So, I mean, him and Rey, if Julius Creed was just the preview for Rey, like, I really hope these two, it's not just done for like some quick comedy type of match where it's all the focus on like Chad Gable, like comedy stuff, because these two could have like a real sleeper match on the show that if they get like enough time, which my God, for pretty much 7 matches per night, and we've got like 4-hour windows or so for these events. Like, I know the video packages are going to be out of control on these shows, but you would hope everyone gets their allotted time that you would hope is sufficient.
I like how he's been going silencio as well instead of shush. It's been a nice little touch there.
It's WrestleMania month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, and we are going to have wall-to-wall coverage of the events from Las Vegas beginning Thursday, April 17th. We're going to be doing daily shows on the Post Wrestling Cafe featuring myself, John Cena, and many more of the Post Wrestling staff. Plus, this month, it is 2 editions of Rewind Away as we cover SummerSlam 1997 and a retrospective of Jumbo Tsuruta. All that, plus coverage of New Japan's Sakura Genesis, Windy City Riot, Collision Course, and of course, Daredevil Born Again on MCU Later. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door. Then there was a War Raiders video as they talked about their main event for WrestleMania. They addressed a new day. They have blazed a path of world domination over the last decade. We had you beat last week, but you took the coward's way out. Eric yells, "You came for my neck. You came to end my career. This isn't a wrestling match. This isn't a fight. This is war." And that is how this is being promoted as war. They're going to war this weekend, and New Day react to this by Kathy Kelly informing them that it's a war. They said, "It's been a war for months in front of these fans. It's been a war for us in this locker room. We are the greatest tag team on earth," and the fans will scream, "Thank God for the New Day." So they're making their most of this match. It will be a war on, this is night 2 that we will be getting this match for the tag titles. No, night one, my mistake.
This is bizarre because the Raw tag division is essentially non-existent, and they've been building the SmackDown division, it feels, for like the whole of this year. Yet, as we're standing, it's SmackDown and not having the tag titles. That could change on Friday, but this is the tag title match at WrestleMania. New Day was so hot after that heel turn, and it's gone completely cold. I thought they were feuding with Rey. That got dropped cold. They're now with the War Raiders. Like, this, I like the War Raiders. This should be something you're getting me excited about. War Raiders versus the New Day, but it's been so lazy, this build, that I put it there with the other the women's tag, just completely thrown together. And yeah, I it could be good on the night, but I can't say I'm excited about this one.
It's a weird mix of, like, we talk about our 10 weeks of Gunther J, and then it's also like you had all this time and you still have these like thrown together matches. It's not like we did not have the time to kind of dedicate to just giving you a bit more substance. But that is the case for a lot of this, like the lower end of the card that does just kind of feel like we're crowbarring a lot of people onto this card at the last minute.
Now, the only thing that might make this is, and I don't know, like, obviously none of us know physically how he is, but if there is a Big E appearance, you have had, you know, I can't remember if it was Eric or Ivar mentioning the neck, and New Day in Twitter and stuff kind of airbrushing Big E out of all their tag title victories and stuff like that. So whether for a moment you could have something like that, you know, Big E doesn't necessarily have to be physically involved, but could potentially cost New Day the titles and would get a good reaction. Like, that could be a feel good moment. But yeah, other than that, it doesn't really deserve a place on this card, in my opinion.
He could give a big ending to Tony Hinchcliffe like that. That would be,
yes,
that would be a great pop too. AJ Styles against Karrion Kross. So let's get this storyline out there that Michael Cole explained to us. Karrion Kross went to the same designer who makes AJ Styles tights, and he wanted to get similar ones made to prompt AJ to go back to his darker ways.
So have you been aware of this, where all of these weird Karrion Kross segments backstage, he has deliberately been dressing like the person? When he was doing it to Sami Zayn, he had scruffier hair with the little man bun on top. And now that's why he's been straightening his hair to look like AJ. It's,
it's an interesting character.
It's been keeping him a job, I guess. but this is what, his first match on Raw?
This is his first match on Raw this year.
I didn't know this dude wrestled. I thought he just walked around backstage. Just
I think this was
people.
His third match this year. And one Come of those on. Three was the Chris Bay benefit show. So a rare in-ring appearance for Karrion Kross. There was also a great moment where Michael Cole explains how there's a reason Karrion Kross has gone back to his old entrance to get that fire back. And the comical part is that at least they cut out his entrance. Like, we just came back from break and he was in the ring. So unless you were watching live during the commercials, I don't think you got to see his entrance. But Scarlett gets involved here. She's choking AJ. Kross takes control for a long time. He also just sends AJ flying into the timekeeper's area. AJ was not taking it easy here on his week before the big show. Kross lifts AJ and just went for some type of counter here. So Kross just like landed on top of him to go for the cover that just seemed like they had their wires crossed. Kross then holds his ankle and is faking an injury. AJ's looking concerned here, so he just gets nailed with a cheap shot. And then Karrion Kross laughed, and then he did some kind of a jig that I can only say was reminiscent of Becky Lynch's NXT debut. If you missed this, this is worth going back just to watch this little dance that he did. He was so impressed with himself for outwitting AJ Styles. So Kross hits a DDT, sets up for the crosshammer. AJ ducks, Ushiguroshi, phenomenal forearm, and he pins Karrion Kross, bringing his 2025 Raw record to 0-1 after 9 minutes and 46 seconds.
I don't understand Karrion Kross in this company. I he's been entertaining enough backstage, but he never wrestles and then just loses. I don't get it. I can't say I'm ever excited about watching a Karrion Kross match, and this was much the same. It didn't really make me any more excited to watch Logan Paul versus AJ Styles, and it didn't make me any more excited to watch Karrion Kross talk to people backstage. So this didn't really do a whole lot for me at all.
Yeah, Karrion Kross is a very, you look at how much stuff from, like, the Final Testament that gets pulled away from him. He's involved in this thing with The Miz. They just dropped that. Week after week after week, he's involved with Sami Zayn. That just felt like, I know this is going nowhere, and it went nowhere. And he's kind of just this, like, plot progressor for characters for their other programs. And he's sort of just the in-between guy.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
Heyman's still out in the parking lot. He's just watching his phone. He's just waiting and waiting. During the break, we had
We skipped out. Logan Paul came out.
Logan comes out to congratulate AJ. He insults Sacramento, saying they're not cool enough to live in LA, not smart enough to live in San Francisco. And he throws to his own highlight video of all his social media stats and just a whole highlight pack. Styles calls the video cute, but challenges him to come and face him now. But then Kross returns, so it's a 2-on-1 attack, and AJ manages a inverted DDT to Kross, but that allows Paul to hit him with the titanium punch and the pulverizer, laying out AJ as our final angle going into this weekend.
Yes, I do like that move. I think it looks very good, the pulverizer. I think it will be a well kind of choreographed match at WrestleMania. I'm kind of grown a bit tired of Logan Paul now. It's kind of the same feud with whoever he's against. AJ Styles will be the right opponent for him, but I'm not overly excited about this one.
During the commercial, we had American Maid come out. Gable just complained about losing his WrestleMania opportunity, but he is happy for this young up-and-comer, El Grande Americano. Jey Uso comes out through the crowd, huge reaction, and he's on the desk, pauses, restarts the music, and just goes through the greatest hits here, but then gets on the mic, says that he said what he had to say to Gunther last week. I just want to speak to you, the people. And he mentions his mother being somewhere here tonight. He says Gunther is mad, and he's also afraid. Afraid that I'm going to whoop his ass this Saturday. And that's it. I'm going to get him. And he calls for his music, and he leaves through the crowd. He did not have a whole lot to say here, but it was like the audience was just going nuts here for Jey, and they were really teeing this up of like the just – what his entrance will look like on Saturday. That I'm sure is, you know, if you are going to put I'm not the biggest fan of the title match always kicking off the show, but that is quite the visual just to start things off.
Oh, yeah.
You have a Jey Uso entrance, and I would say like a pretty good likelihood of him winning this title on Saturday.
Yeah. I part of me wishes they maybe like took a week off of the feud last week and just had that segment from last week this week. Cause I think that definitely hyped me up more. This, like a lot of this show, and I felt a lot with SmackDown last week, very much treading water. We have all these matches in place, and let's just remind you that this match is happening. But this wasn't necessarily the go-home promo I wanted from Jey. I wanted something a little bit more like fired up and personal, and therefore I think maybe we should have just done last week's this week.
Well, Kathy Kelly is with Bron Breakker, and he gets jumped by the Judgment Day members. And, you know, Davey, you have probably had to deal with some unruly patrons that have consumed too much. And I'm sure this is common that you would hear it right in the midst of a big physical battle as Finn yells, "Arr, looks like your bark is worse than your bite."
I've heard that so many times that's classic trash talk. Yeah,
hilarious. So Braun is off to go lick his wounds. We're gonna get a WrestleMania kickoff show Friday at 5 p.m. In case 3 hours is not enough for you of SmackDown on Friday night, you have a kickoff show, and I think they're doing 3 hours of pre-shows Saturday and Sunday.
Like this WrestleMania, like I tend not to have too much sympathy for people. It's like, you know, you hope they're getting paid pretty nicely, but fuck, like what is the call time for Stand and Deliver for those NXT talent? And
it's, like they're it's
are 10 they expected to be at Hall of Fame? Are they like, you know, because normally that used to be a thing. It's like everyone should be at Hall of Fame and pay their respects, but like they're gonna have to be there at 6-7 in the morning.
Oh, right. I'm sure it's going to be a super early one. Because what, it's 10 a.m. local time that the show goes live. So yeah, I'm sure there's going to be people that like their production is a sizable amount too. But there's absolutely going to be people that probably have to go right from the Hall of Fame to the arena to do NXT as well.
And then like, you've got a kickoff like probably taking place the same time NXT is going on by the sounds of it. It's crazy this year.
It's like the amount on like your production staff. It's just incredible over this week and this year. It's just the sheer amount of events that they are staging, from the After Dark stuff and all the stuff at the Fountain Blue, and with all of this, like it's just a massive undertaking that you have of just all these hours that they're going to produce. Then we go to Penta and Finn Balor, and Penta knocks Balor off the apron during his entrance and hits a dive to the floor. After a backstabber out of the corner, Penta manages a flying head scissors that sends Balor off of the top turnbuckle. Each of them connect with a sling blade, and then Penta hits the sacrifice, snapping Balor's arm, but not to the detriment that he can't counter an immediate Penta driver with a roll-up. And then Penta calls for the Mexican Destroyer. Dom and Carlito show up, and that leads to Balor hitting the sling blade, sets up for the coup de grace when Bron Breakker's music plays. And this was actually pretty funny, where Carlito is there at the ring and he just looks around like he's seen Michael Myers show up, and he just runs into the ring away from this spear. Braun sprints down into the ring, attacking Balor for the DQ in 11:34. Dom and Carlito get involved, and we get Braun delivering the double spear to Carlito and Dom simultaneously. Then he points to Penta, goes for the spear, is kicked in the face, and then Penta tries for a head scissors, and Braun pretty much has to send himself out of the ring because Penta totally lost him here. And then Penta hits a high cross to the floor, stares down Balor, and Michael Cole notes, this is the first fatal four-way for the IC title in WrestleMania history. So a monumental match that these four will have this weekend. The first fatal four-way in WrestleMania history for the IC title. That's quite the qualifier.
I almost thought he was going to go, this is the first fatal four-way for the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania Sunday, and just have that extra clarifier there. You know what? I thought the match was fine. I find at this stage, I find it a little hard to get into Finn Balor matches. Penta, I still find really exciting watching him on WWE TV. But I think as far as like all these multi-man matches we're getting at WrestleMania, I'm kind of really up for this one. I think you've got just Braun, who is so exciting to watch, Penta equally, but then kind of you've got the story and the intrigue with Dom and Finn and what's going on there. And if there's going to be a breakup with those two, if we're going to have this fifth member, this new member join in for Judgment Day. So I think there's a lot going on, and I think they'll work this four-way really well. And I think they'll, especially with Braun and Penta, be some pretty cool spots in this match, because we're going to get a hell of a spear at WrestleMania.
Yeah. I mean, they really have, I think, like that is almost like the expectation that you have to do some incredible, and maybe involving Penta as well. Like that's been the tease that Braun can't get his spear onto Penta as well. I think this one will be laid out really well. I actually kind of like Dominic being involved in this, because I think you can get a lot of some fun there with Dominic involved.
I think he's winning the title, to be honest.
I could see that happening. It's very possible. I could see them doing that.
I don't think Penta necessarily needs it right now. And I think we need to move Braun up into the world title picture. And with it being a four-way, he doesn't even need to get pinned. And I think you can pay off whatever Judgment Day story you're telling right now and introduce this new member, which means Dom can win. I definitely see that being the route they're taking here.
Io Sky video was next, subtitled, "Everyone keeps forgetting she's the champion. I am the reason you are fighting in the first place, and I'm done being ignored and forgotten. I've beaten both of you, and I'm going to do it again at WrestleMania." And then I looked down, and we had like 25 minutes for this final segment. I was like, I hope we have a lot of material here for this this closer.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chalk-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Heyman is out waiting in the parking lot. CM Punk walks up to him, puts his arm around him, notes how stressed Heyman looks, and then Roman Reigns shows up and he sees Paul cheating on him. He catches him in the act with CM Punk. And Heyman, no, it's not what it looks like. And he chases after Roman out into the arena for Roman's entrance. And Roman comes out. And I'm pretty much up to live. And so here we're watching on Netflix. We go to break.
Did you get the thing with Punk and Paul by the car?
Yes.
Where he's like, Paul, I've never seen you so stressed. Look in my eyes. What do you see? Yeah. And he's like, the personality. Culture personality?
Yes.
No, a real friend.
He's so turning on this guy on Saturday. It's like 100% guaranteed. So Reigns, anyway, he comes out and then the clock comes up 3 minutes as he's walking down. My God, did this man use every second, and he just is ready after those 3 minutes, like the longest entrance imaginable here. And Heyman goes to hand him the mic. Reigns walks over and takes his own mic. Reigns says, "You all love the tribal chief. You would never betray me. but some people would betray me. Paul, how could you betray me? And the crowd starts chanting, you fucked up. So Netflix is trying to censor this. Reigns goes to step in. And I'm thinking Reigns is going to try and kill this chant because they're clearly not wanting these chants. But no, Reigns is like, I don't think Paul can hear you. Much like some people can't hear me with this goddamn microphone that I'm about to destroy. So the crowd is just chanting at Heyman. And Heyman says, I am not betraying you. I'm just paying back a favor that was owed. Reigns says, I'm the only one being screwed over this favor. I've never asked for a favor. I take what I want. And I never asked for anyone's help at War Games. Why do I have to cover the tab for this dumbass favor? And with that, Seth comes out. And this is the image that this is the stripper showing up at the bachelorette party. This was the outfit. He was in all black leather. This was something out of like a Shawn Michaels wardrobe from back in his mid-90s run. So he states that Reigns, you're finally putting all the pieces together, but it's too late. This is the most important triple threat, not just in the history of WrestleMania, not just in the history of this company, but in the history of this industry. So they are one-upping this first ever Fatal 4-Way at a WrestleMania in this particular city on this date. But now, this is the biggest triple threat in the history of wrestling because the winner will define the future of our industry. I thought Mark Shapiro was already on top of that. But that person cannot be Roman Reigns, who only shows up when it's convenient. And if it's you, this industry will die. It's like, I didn't know we were on life support, but apparently we are. And for CM Punk, he can just take his ball and go home whenever he pleases and then returns to leech off other people's work. So the idea is if Punk wins, we'll have all this next generation of people wanting to be like Punk who will leave at a moment's notice and then come back to leech off of everyone's work. So the industry too will die if CM Punk wins. This industry will only thrive if Seth Rollins wins. I think all the television rights would have an argument to make against Seth Rollins' argument here. But Seth is out to save professional wrestling, and that is what is at stake in the main event on Saturday night.
To start with, I loved Roman barging past Paul Heyman to get the microphone. There's a video I've seen a few times where a guy and his girl are walking down the road and they walk past a girl who drops her handbag. So the guy goes and picks up the handbag and gives it to her. And then his girlfriend's all acting all jealous and keeps dropping her bag deliberately for him to pick up until he runs and like throws the other girl's bag on the floor because he's like, no, it's just you. It's just you. And I just got jealous girlfriend vibes from Roman at the top of this. The Seth promo, I'm definitely higher on this feud than most, but again, I got real treading water vibes with this segment. And I think this feud really would have benefited from maybe less of this and maybe like, you know, a long form sit down interview with Jackie Redmond, like we had before the Punk and Rollins thing. I definitely think from Roman, I think there's some untapped material there from, you know, the podcast and stuff like that, which they very loosely referenced in the past. But I think getting into like actually how personal, how deep and how far back this story goes between all three guys is a lot more interesting than WWE hyperbole of just this is the most important triple threat ever. And we're fighting for the future of this company. There's stuff that hasn't been said yet in this feud. And I think it's a shame considering the people involved, especially with Heyman and Punk, who you know like going there. And I think like Seth has definitely, his promo has improved for me in the last year or so. I think you can really tell when he's dialed in and where there's something that is a little bit more personal and close to home that he taps into. And I think we've missed that. And I think this was really the week to do that. And actually, maybe it's just, you know, lack of stars on this show. We need Roman, Punk and Seth out there in front of this crowd. But really, I think we could have had something a little bit more personal than this because it felt very cliche to me.
Rollins explains that favors are a choice, and Rollins chose not to put Heyman in the hospital last week. Heyman's a scumbag. I expect nothing from him, and Heyman has made a choice. He isn't just returning a favor. He's choosing Punk over you. And Reigns looks at Heyman and says, he's right. He made his choice, and I've made mine. As he turns around and attacks Rollins, runs his shoulder into the post, Heyman laughs and tells Roman, I acknowledge you. And Reigns shoves Heyman to the ground, prompting CM Punk to run down, and he gets into it with Roman Reigns. They're going back and forth, and then he checks on Heyman, and Reigns returns, spearing Punk. Rollins then returns and nails Roman from behind with, as Michael Cole yells, the shield chair. And just because of, no subtlety at all, Cole just spells it out for us. This is eerily similar to how he broke up the shield.
I mean, Seth wearing stripper shield gear tonight as well, like that very was, shield inspired.
I think all of this came together with the wardrobe choice. But he lays out Roman and then proceeds to hit a stomp to both Punk and Reigns. And the show closer is Rollins standing tall and staring down Heyman, who is looking on in fear. And that is it, as we go into the biggest, most important three-way in the history of professional wrestling this Saturday. And a curious choice that for this whole segment, and having like 20 plus minutes dedicated, no Punk promo to close things out.
John, I just want to start by saying, just because I haven't stomped you on the back of the head today, you don't owe me a favor. Okay. I'm not sure Seth realizes that not killing someone doesn't owe you a favor. I kind of said my thoughts earlier. I do think it just felt a little cliche. I think there was a bit more juice I wanted to get out of this feud. I am looking forward to the match.
How long do you think this one goes?
I think we'll get substantial time.
I think so too. Yeah.
I think 25 minutes plus, and then you've got your entrances and things as well. I think we'll have a decent amount of time. You're going to have all the shenanigans with Paul as well towards the end. I did find it interesting Seth standing tall tonight, because I do see him being the one who wins this match, which normally, you know, the way things go, the guy standing tall at the end of Raw going into WrestleMania isn't necessarily the one winning. But I think Seth, it kind of makes the most sense with him winning this. I don't think the other two need it. I think Seth is due a bit of a character change. And I think if you're having Jey Uso win the World Heavyweight title, I see Seth being the guy who takes it off him pretty quickly after.
And are you of the belief of Heyman aligning with Rollins coming out of this? And do you think that they're almost pointing you so much in that direction that you don't see them going that way?
I was thinking the Heyman thing until last week, where I think they made it so obvious that I kind of went against that. I do see Heyman leaving both these guys, though, because they aren't really being good friends, are they? Like, Punk, if he is his best friend, shouldn't have put him in this position. And then Roman is being a bit of a dick as well, like not respecting this favor and this friendship. So I do see there being justification for Heyman to turn. But personally, I'd kind of prefer to see him maybe paired with Bron Breakker a little bit down the line, as you're building Bron Breakker for a main event feud. Seth doesn't necessarily need him, but it would be interesting and it would be fun to happen at WrestleMania. But I think they pushed it a little bit too hard for that to be the case.
So in terms of a go-home show, I mean, do you feel like the kind of the build, at least for the programs we saw focused on tonight, had peaked earlier? What was your overall assessment just in terms of pushing people towards Mania? Did this just feel as though, you know, the build is done and we are just, people are either they're into the show or they have not been sold on it.
It's been such a weird build this year for WrestleMania. I didn't think this was a particularly good Raw. I didn't think this like made me any more excited about any of the feuds going into WrestleMania. I've heard people saying that there's been a lack of build this year for WrestleMania, and I disagree. I actually think we've kind of seen the direction for 80% of the card for quite a while. Like every majority, barring like the tag team matches, majority of these matches have been telling a story for quite a while, but maybe that's been the problem because there hasn't been anything really juicy to get you into it. And therefore we've gone back to like wrestling 101 cliches, angles we've seen before, and it hasn't made it particularly exciting. And I think, as I mentioned, something like the Seth Roman Punk match has really lacked a little bit of just personal, like more personal promos. I think the lack of Cena on TV since the turn, the lack of explanation. I mean, I know it's been harped on about, but this whole like elephant in the room with The Rock has really made this show suffer. And it makes me wonder if he's going to be there or not. I've kept on saying it hasn't been down for Cena to explain why he's with The Rock. He's a bad guy. He doesn't have to explain his actions. But Cody should be someone being like, hey, what the fuck? Why did you, The Rock, and Travis Scott attack me? That's the first thing I'd ask. Instead, it's kind of just pushed that aside, and it's been a promo that Cena's had in his notebook written down for 15 years, it feels. So I think that, as excited as I am for Cena Cody, and I think by the time the entrances happen and the video package, I'm going to be really excited for that. But I think they've dropped the ball. So, and I think the rest, it's just been okay build. There are stories going into it. I could tell you about 90% of the matches on the card, what the story is. Is that story interesting? I don't think so for a lot of it. So, and this Raw, and I kind of feel SmackDown's going to be the same. And I felt SmackDown was the same last week. We know the show, we know the card, we know what's happening. I feel like I could have skipped this Raw and it hasn't changed anything going into Mania.
Yeah, and it also does feel like the big kind of final push is kind of reserved for Friday with Cena on the show. Like that feels like the stronger TV this week with the very clear, I think, program that does have your most interest. And I think an intrigue for Friday as well of like, is there going to be any last minute hint of Rock showing up? Like I don't think you necessarily want a just completely out of, like, I think if Rock is going to be there on Sunday, which he should, I think you want to at least hint at that as rather than like, if you want to just get that last minute, like 48 hour buzz, like I would want to at least send people in that direction. So we will see if there's any kind of hint at that on Friday.
It's just been such a thing, like with the weird kind of babyface turn up, the Netflix debut, and then shifting away from that. I feel The Rock is part of the company. He is going to show up as and when he wants, and you can't necessarily have him completely attached to stories, but I think he should be, the final boss should be this omnipresent character that he doesn't have to be there, but he's referenced. We know he exists. We know he's pulling the strings behind the scenes. We know all of that. And to kind of try and write him out of stories, to just write him back in, just seems so... It's the new Vince. It's the new Vince showing up to Raw and screwing the script up and starting again, it feels like. And that's definitely what it's felt since Chamber to now.
Hey,
so
hey, he told us he's playing chess. We're all playing checkers. Okay.
Sure,
he's five steps ahead of us. Okay.
I don't know how to play either, so sure.
That's going to wrap up the free portion here on the YouTube channel. But do yourselves a favor, go on over to poisonrana.ca. Davian Braden will be back here on this channel tomorrow night following NXT, where they will be going through hopefully the finalized card for Stand and Deliver. So check out all of that. And we are going to be continuing for those on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We have a few pieces of feedback before we wrap things up. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.